Blog Talk Radio.
Days and brand new year will be upon us. We're grateful tonight that you join us, and we have a very special guest that we're really happy to have with us, and look forward to some really meaningful dialogue here tonight. And want you to know that you're welcome to share with us. For those of you who may not be familiar with the format for the show, we will be taking time to provide some context or factual information about some of the things we would talk about, but we have no greater reference or authentication of the truth than someone who is working in this field right now and who deals with this on a daily basis. So we're grateful to have with us the Chief Magistrate of Bessemer, Alabama, and we're going to bring him in just a little bit, but again, we will begin with giving some contextual background for the show. You are, call us here at 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We will put you in queue, and the way we'll do it to identify you is we'll call the last four numbers of your phone number. Sometimes we have individuals calling from other area codes, so we will refer to you by the last four digits of your phone number. So prepare yourself to call. And again, join us in this Talk Straight episode. Again, this is your host, Reuben Dockery. And in just a moment, we'll be introducing our very special guest. But let me give a little background for our conversation tonight. The topic for tonight's show, as you saw in the promo, is we're talking about restorative justice. And in the interest of understanding that, what we want to do is to give, again, as I mentioned, some basis for what we're talking about. Unfortunately, we've seen all across America a number of issues, and there are a lot of people frustrated for one reason or another. Many feel as though there's little to no justice. But in the context of restorative justice, let me just define what restorative means and give a basic framework for justice. Restorative, something, especially a medicine or drink, that restores health, strength, or well-being. Justice, the quality of being just, righteousness, equitableness, or moral rightness, the moral principle determining just conduct. Putting those two words together in one concept, restorative justice, we want to restore the social well-being of individuals in society by ensuring that they have justice, things that are right, equitable opportunities, moral and fair representation, and in general, a respect for their rights and privileges as an American citizen. So this is what we're talking about relative to restorative justice. Now, let's be very clear that there are two sides to this coin. Yes, the criminal justice system is one side, but then the other side is us as citizens ourselves. We'll get into that a little bit more. I want to first begin by pointing out some things that the group in the 90s, Public Enemy, song was called Can't Trust It. Just briefly, some of the words that they shared in this particular song were emblematic of the age and the mindset and the temperament of individuals. What I find interesting is that even in 2016, soon to be 17, there is another generation of that mindset that we must embrace, that we must educate and empower to ensure that they have not only justice, but restorative justice in many cases. Public Enemy says, but then again, I got a story that's harder than the hardcore. Cost of the Holocaust. I'm talking about the one still going on. I know where I'm from, not dumb, diddy dumb, from the base motherland, the place of the drum, invaded by the wackity wack, fool the black, left of king and chiefs, probably had a big beef. Because of that, now I grit my teeth. Here's a song to be strong about a shake of a snake, and the smile went along with that. Can't trust it. All right, so let's give some demographic information about the city of Bessemer. As we mentioned, as we promoted this, where Bessemer is one of the cities, one of the states that we're endeavoring to go to, Alabama is. And again, we're grateful to have the magistrate to join us tonight, but just want to give some context for Bessemer. We began our research in Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, it is a much larger city base than Bessemer because of the metropolitan government. But in the Bessemer area, it is considered to be a medium-sized city located in the state of Alabama, again, with a population of approximately 26,949 people and 12 constituent neighborhoods to boot. The greater number of Bessemer residents, report their race as being black or African-American, and the next is the white population. The per capita income in Bessemer, according to the 2010 estimates, was about $16,716, which is lower, which is the lower to middle income relative to Alabama comparatively, and low income relative to the rest of the United States of America. The area town with the least performing schools is reported, according to Neighborhood Scout, as being the 9th Avenue North and the 22nd Street North area. According to Neighborhood Scouts again, two of the areas reported as being the most unsafe are the 9th Avenue North and the 22nd Avenue Street North and the Jonesboro Oakwood neighborhoods. Bessemer's annual crime rate per 1,000 residents are reported to be as follows. They reported that, I believe within last year, approximately 205 or 7.61% violent crimes, 1,422 or 52.77% property crimes. Additionally, it had a higher rate compared to the state of Alabama, that being 71 in Bessemer and 4.27 across Alabama. Now, just briefly, let's look at the breakdown, what the breakdown is. Our assumption, based on our research of Bessemer and the other cities that we're aiming to come to, is that what they all have in common is a general unawareness of civic expectations on part of those who are most likely to negatively engage the criminal justice system. a lack of understanding of their proscriptive values as related to socioeconomic pressures that they face. Now, let me pro-social. It's a sociological term, and in sociology, there are prescriptive norms or values and proscriptive. Prescriptives are those that are prescribed or written by law and generally accepted by members of society as the general rule and expectation for everyone. However, proscriptives are more ethnocentric in nature. They tend to happen and are shared within a certain neighborhood or amongst a certain group, typically, for instance, a gang or a little social organization that have a certain set of values or behaviors that they engage in. For sure, the drug culture has its own proscriptive values. And this is what dictates, and this is the law, if you will, of the individuals that are engaged in that subculture. The problem is that there's a conflict often with what is expected civically of everyone and what is assumed by a smaller segment population. This is what we want to talk about tonight. We want to address that particular issue. Now, I mentioned that in the promo that we're looking to offer an outline for solutions. Well, I'll talk about, as we go through the show, some of those outlines. But let me now bring in our special guest, Bessemer's Chief Magistrate, Maurice Mohammed. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, Ruben. How are you, sir?
Mighty fine. Mighty fine. We appreciate you joining us.
Beautiful.
And with us tonight.
Oh,
a little bit about the Chief Magistrate. He and I went to Fisk University together. Good man.
Good. That's
man.
Right. Yes, sir. The mighty Fisk University.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We're sons on the altar. We're sons on the altar.
Oh,
family man, beautiful family, and has been working for some years, over the years there in the Alabama area, the Bessemer area. I understand he managed a company prior to going into this role as chief magistrate. And how many years have you been there now?
I have been in the city of Bessemer for 4 years now. But prior to coming to Bessemer, I was a magistrate in the city of Birmingham for 17 years.
Okay.
And
okay,
so
okay.
This is, yes, I was listening as you begin to go into our demographics. And one of the things, I guess, for a better visual of it, Bessemer is a subdivision, and it also sits in the metropolitan area of Birmingham.
I see. So it's part of the greater city.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, in the Birmingham metro area, there are 28 municipalities within a 10-mile radius of one another. Yeah.
Wow.
So we have a lot of outskirting cities and suburban cities that make up the Birmingham metropolitan area. And all of them are in Jefferson County. So we share some borders.
Wow, man. Okay. It was interesting to see that there was a large, I think over 70-some% African American in the Bessemer area.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Predominantly
okay.
At this point. And most of the Birmingham area at this point is predominantly African American. Most of our smaller city areas make up our other populations, white, Hispanic, but primarily the root and the grind and the core of Birmingham and most of the metropolitan areas in our district are African American predominated.
Okay. All right. Magistrate, I share with individuals via Facebook and Twitter and other promotions. I said, don't miss the opportunity to participate in a motivational dialogue where we will outline proactive strategies to redirect the social mentality and behavior patterns of at-risk male youth in a manner that leads to success in society. From the bench, can you tell us generally what are some of the things you see? And if you could, what are some creative or innovative ways you would execute justice as you adjudicate various cases?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, just I guess looking at our area is a cosm of the greater macrocosm. When you look at Birmingham area, you look at Bethlehem, you look at all of those areas, you also look at Nashville, you also look at Huntsville, you also look at Memphis. And I tell, you know, I talk to young people all the time, and I say the same dog that bit in Birmingham, that same dog was biting in Memphis. That same dog was biting in St. Louis. So regardless to how what boundary you have, you're really having the same problem all over because we're suffering from the same elements. You know, we're suffering from the same social climate-based elements that and issues that are predominating our community. You know, when we're looking at fatherless children, they're not fatherless. I tell people all the time, you have a daddy, but will you show up and be one? You know, because you couldn't have gotten here without one. Right. Absolutely. You know, so just that, you know, when we start talking about young black men that don't have fathers, sometimes we can go overboard with that. But we understand that the man is the thermostat of the house. You know, he kind of determines the temperature. He determines the mood. And by doing that, by being a very positive male role model in your home, then you can influence not only your children, but you can influence generations of children. You know, I remember one time I had an opportunity to address brothers in prison. And I asked them, I said, well, I asked all the brothers to raise their hand who have children. And how many of you have daughters? Mm-hmm. And they raise their hands. And I say, now, when they become 18, how would you like for your daughter to bring you home to you? How many of you in this institution would like your daughter to bring home a man just like yourself?
Oh.
And brothers drop their heads. They drop their heads and they drop, you know, their hands, and they begin to take on a posture of reflection. And so I said that because most times when we see young ladies that are making mistakes, they're looking for their father. Most times when you see young men who are making mistakes, they're looking for that father figure, even in their mistakes. So when we began to say, okay, well, how can we work for solutions? How can we work? And I think that's the biggest concept because, you know, we've talked, I've been on several talk shows where we talked about the problem, and sometimes we can get paralyzed with the analyzing of our problems rather than caught up in the institutionalizing of our solutions.
Right.
And so with that, I say that all of our parenting groups, all of our male organizations, our fraternities, and, you know, we're both a part of the Masonic Order. You know, how many of our lodges are doing things in the community? How many of our young men even know about the lodges? You know, you have brothers who are members of fraternities. I happen to be a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity. How many of us in those fraternities are actually mentoring young men on some basis or have some type of institutionalized program where we're actually interacting? So a lot of times one of our biggest concerns and one of our biggest points of deficit is we gain education for things rather than substance.
Wow.
And so we know
I'm sorry, you said something heavy. Will you elaborate on that again, that statement you just made?
About gaining education for things rather than substance.
I apologize for cutting you off, but that was heavy right there, man.
Well, not a problem. Well, I think a lot of times when we are in our professions, we don't look at the purest aspect of our professions. We look at the money-making end of our professions. And we begin to equate the quality of life with what we can purchase and what we can attain rather than actually how can we confer morals and how can we confer healthy living to young men and young women. So I would rather be a good attorney than a moral attorney. I would rather be a rich attorney than a moral attorney. You know, so mm-hmm. I'll do a little lying. I'll do a little paying witnesses just to get my man off, just to have him on the bait. So now I end up using him rather than teaching him.
Wow.
So then now we begin to even prey on one another professionally. But going back to our point of dealing one with the other in terms of how do we bring solution, the solution is right in the middle of the problem. If we have young children that are not guided, and I think that's what we have. See, God has blessed us with a generation of warriors. But at the same time, if we don't stand up and train the warriors, then they don't know when and who to fight. See, another warrior that's a warrior within itself, and they see him as a noble warrior, and they want to fight him rather than coming together and fighting what the problem is. They begin to fight one another, and then they become the problem. And now the problem of both of our issues are now being masked with the issue that we have with one another. So I believe
now,
the guidance of the young men.
Okay. Guidance is okay. All right. So now you said something. Here.
Guidance.
I introduced Public Enemy, and this was a song in our generation. This was a song of our generation.
Yes, sir.
Those young brothers then expressed a discontent for law and order in society to the point that they said, if you tell us that we get an education, we do things right, we be a lawful abiding, we can't trust that because we've been wrong.
No,
and it's interesting today, Your Honor, how so many young people, you can't even get them to be rational because they're operating from this, no, I can't trust the authority of society to be fair, honest, and just.
Right. Sure.
Will you speak to that for a second?
Yes, sir, definitely, because what happens is just what we saw as when we grew up. Listen to the music that we grew up in. We grew up in an era where it was feeding our intellectual point. You know, you brought out the point of you can't trust it. Then we had KRS-One with You Must Know, and it was telling us about, you know, the kings and queens in Africa. You know, we got other songs today that are telling our children, you know, baby, I'm going to make it be like Columbine. If you don't get with me, it's going to be like Columbine.
Right.
You like, huh? Or, you know, your overtone is wicked, 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 wicked. You know, why are you dealing with something that is wicked? You know, where is the drive in the music? Because the music reflects the revolution of the people. You know, in the 60s, they said they were black and proud. They allowed that black and proud. And our people needed that theme song. And so as bad as it got, when we came up, we can't trust it. 9-1-1 was a joke. You know, we had we had all of these young men that were bringing positive messages, but they were bringing conscious messages. See, what has happened is our music has wrapped us to sleep. And our message, our music, woke us up. And our open enemy, those who did not have an interest for you or I or any of those that look like us, our open enemy said we can't allow them to be on a thought pattern together. We need to interrupt it. And so they interrupted it with the music. And I think one of the aspects of even coming back together when you're talking about trusting that is we have to have sound examples within our community. You know, it used to be a time where there was some shame. You know, if you did something wrong, you were ashamed about it. You know, today if you do something wrong, you know, it's a cause now.
Right.
You know, I talk to a lot of our brothers who are in the clergy and who are in positions, and what is happening, a lot of them are not, they're feeding and aiding and abetting the distrust with our young people, even with rights.
Wow.
So what we have to do is really get back to a sense of what is right and what is wrong, not what is convenient.
Okay. Absolutely.
So we got to have a revolution of mind in order for us to have, because what we're realizing now is if there's a fault to it, if you know Dr. Dockery, this is our generation, these are our children. So why are we afraid of the very children that we see in birth?
You know, that's what I've been
telling the moral authority.
Exactly what I say all the time, Your Honor, man. Listen, there's no need of us waiting on anybody else because these are our children, our neighborhood, and our community.
Yeah.
And, it's, and as
so,
men.
As a man.
Right.
Damn.
It's appalling
that
as. I'm sorry. I was just going to say it's appalling it's appalling that as men we even think that somebody else should assume that responsibility. But
sure.
I like what you're saying, that we, too many of us, have even taken our profession as a tool to get over as opposed to empower and strengthen our brothers. I read somewhere that when you were converted, you ought to reach back and strengthen your brother. But as opposed to doing that, you're using it basically as a way to monitorize their troubles and the struggles of their lives.
Right. And see, a lot of times, Brother Doctor, we use our positions to even segregate ourselves from our own community.
Come on now. Come on, Your Honor. Come on now.
And what happens with that professionally, you know, if you have attained, and see, I don't have a problem, and you knew me, but we were in school, and I was Mo Mac.
Right,
so
right,
when you call me Mo Mac, you know, I know that we have a kinship at a certain place. So I can't come away from, I can't come to homecoming, or I can't come to where we are and say, no longer am I Mo Mac. I'm Maurice Baum, the Honorable Maurice Muhammad, J.D., Dr. Maurice Muhammad, and so on. You know, I can't do that because now that's separating me from who our relationship. And now what we can't do, if we grew up in the project and we made it out of the project, then we need to let young men see us come back to the project.
Wow.
And come and get them and take them into another reality. And then when we see a new reality, then they will attain for a new reality, but it cannot be a false reality.
Right.
We cannot,
right.
And see what has happened, especially to our community as men, our testicular fortitude has been tried and cold. And so you can fool us and get us and tame us with things rather than substance.
Wow.
So we'll rather move out into a foreign neighborhood than be a peon, than be a great leader in our community. And so you will go into communities where we have absolutely no voting power.
Absolutely. Wow.
Just to say we live out there. Just to say we're here with a group of people that really don't want you.
You're speaking my language now, Your Honor.
Cats and rabbits. You know, brother, you sit up there with cats and rabbits in your mailbox, and you don't know. I don't know how this got here. Yes, you do. Because the people telling you, you don't need to be out here with us. And your community is starving for your resource, starving for your example. They are starving for a young man to say, hey, I want you to be my dad. I want you to be my example. I want you to be my mentor. But you're putting your efforts into somebody else's reality, and then you shun your home. We deserve everything we get if that happens.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. This is powerful stuff. We're going to you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're listening to Chief Magistrate of Birmingham, Alabama. I'm sorry, Bessemer, Alabama, a suburb of Birmingham, Maurice Muhammad. We're grateful that he's with us. We're going to take a brief break. We got a call from 615. When we come back, caller, we'll bring you on, let you chime in with us. But after this brief message, we're going to bring him back. And on the other side of this, I'd like to ask you a question there, Your Honor, relative to where do we get off thinking that we can make our own rules in society. But hold that thought, when we come back from this brief message, then let's have a conversation about it. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from the street. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Back to Talk Straight. You're listening to your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery, and our special guest tonight, Chief Magistrate of Bessemer, Alabama, Maurice Muhammad. We're grateful to have him sitting in with us. And we have a call from 615. I think I know who this is, Your Honor. This is a good brother right here who knows the story that we're telling. Good evening, caller. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Pastor Dockery?
Mighty fine, mighty fine, mighty fine. This is, Your Honor, this is Reverend Ricky Waller. When I first came to Nashville, can you believe it's been 29 years ago now? I went and volunteered.
Yes,
I went and volunteered at John Henry Hale Community Center off of 16th and Joe Johnson. And there were two infamous names that I heard about. It was the Barbershop Boys and a guy that everybody knew around town called Fat Ricky. Now, the Lord has a strange way of doing things. Because this brother today is a dynamic preacher, a motivator, and an author of a powerful book. My son and I read it, and we had a lot of discussion about it, called Still High. And, Your Honor, he is supporting traveling lecture series by donating a portion of every book he sells to us. Let me introduce this brother to the conversation. Pastor Waller, good evening.
Good evening. How you doing, Pastor Don? And Your Honor, how are you, sir?
Dear brother, I am wonderful, and thank you for having me.
Man, it's great to know that, man. You're very welcome. We appreciate you coming in. And I'm enjoying what you're talking about as well.
All right, all right, all right. Your Honor, I want to ask you this question now. You heard.
Yes, sir.
That was Willie Hutch. That was Willie Hutch, and that was the theme song to the movie The Mac back in the 70s.
Oh.
And,
yes,
and you heard these two brothers dialoguing. One of them is saying, hey, man, this is my business. This is my way of life, man.
I got to get it the way I live. And the other one said, look, we got to clean up our neighborhood. We got a responsibility to our children, to our women, to our families, and we've got to not just tackle one but all of them. This guy said, ain't nobody going to stop me from making my money now. Where do we get off, Your Honor, thinking? And see, we got young men today because we were talking about the difference in the message from the songs in the 90s. You got T.I. now talking about bringing them out, and you got C. Murder saying he down for his nigga, he don't care about nobody else. You got Pastor Troy out of Atlanta talking about we ready to go to war, and Bone Crusher saying he ain't never scared. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Where do we get off culturally? And let me be specific. Our African American brothers and sisters thinking we can cut corners and come up with the rules that fit us like we want it.
I often wonder that sometimes, dear brother. But, you know, one of the things that I ask the brothers who are bad and, you know, who want to have this persona, let me see the check with Bone Crusher on it. The check that you receive will have your name on it. And you know how to act with sense when you go to certain places. You know, I remember when Lil Wayne did the collaboration with what is the brother's young man's name? Lost Without You. I can't think of his name right now. The white gentleman that did Lost Without You and was real hot a couple of years back. But he did a wonderful hip hop rendition on his song, but he didn't curse. He didn't use not one point of vulgarity to clear his point. So that means that when people set the rules, as you're talking about the rules, you know, how can you make your own rules? You make your own rules by creating your own reality. Now, if you want to create, if you want rules, see, rules and laws are basically created to maintain an order of peace. That's why we have traffic rules. So when you're going southbound and I'm going westbound and you have a green light, then I'm going to have a red light, because if we enter the intersection at the same time, we know by physics that two pieces of matter cannot occupy the same space at the same time.
Okay.
And we're going to have a collision that may cost us our life. So what I'm saying with that is what we have to do is a very plainly put, as my grandmother used to tell me, she said, baby, you teach people how to treat you. So in our community, if we don't treat our community with respect, you know, I talked to a couple of, because I have a lot of interaction with police officers, and I say, well, one of the reasons, and I talk to them and get their points and their sentiment, and one of the reasons that they are literally fearful is because how we treat one another.
I see,
if you look at television, or if you look at any type of media that depicts the average black community, what you're going to find is you're going to see a point of, it's like a lion tamer. You don't walk in there with no feather tickler, no duster. He got a revolver on his side because those lions might get out of the, you know, they might get out of turn with him, and he might have to take one down.
That's right.
You know, but
that's
so
right.
I'm saying that because if we want people to respect our community, and we want people to respect our rules, then what we have to do is create our environment and create our reality, that which is peaceful. Now, we have, you know, of course, any society is going to have their disagreement, but there should be a rational point of discourse of how we should be able to sit down. If you don't like me and I don't like you, then it's somebody we both like that can bring us to the table and mediate our differences, because ultimately we are brothers.
Right.
And when we begin to diffuse that, and when we begin to talk other than that, now we have conflict. So now we bring somebody else into the community that does not have an interest in the community.
See,
one of the points of my success in the municipal court arena is I always live where I'm in jurisdiction.
Wow.
So I don't live away
so
from
you,
the people.
So you didn't
that
run away, huh?
No, sir. You know, we don't run away because what happens is what you're doing when you run away, you actually interrupt the process of togetherness and unity.
Wow, that's powerful.
But now they can't trust you because whose mind do you have? Do you
mm-hmm.
still think
mm-hmm.
of the community? Do you still think of the hood? Do you still think of
mm-hmm.
Boo Boo and Donut, Ray Ray and Peanut now? Do you still
right.
they still call you that or are you the honorable?
Gotcha.
You know, and so when
gotcha.
That tie is disconnected, then, as they say, your ghetto pass has been seriously revoked.
Right.
And when you lose
right.
that, now it's easier to communicate with a friend than with a person that you don't know.
Mm.
So if I come to you with a point of friendship, now you
mm-hmm.
trust what I say because now some reason you have my interest in mind. And
right.
we're not dealing with this as a stranger because when you're in the mix with me, when your hand is on the plow, then I know
mm-hmm.
and when that dirt pulls up in your face, it's pulling up in my face too. So I know that
right.
we have a common interest. So when we release
right.
and relinquish the common interest, now people are saying, man, we don't know who to trust. And, now that's writing a song. We can't trust them.
Right.
You know, I was told that $100,000 will buy you a good Negro. And he'll be so dangerous that you can't do nothing with him because he'll fight cats and dogs, snails and lions and elephants and everybody else to keep that money flowing. They'll sell you out, yes, sir, just as sold. You'll be walking around with a tag on your head, didn't even know it. But so I'm saying all of that to say we have to develop that trust. And the way we do it is by developing our own reality. And one of the ways we develop our own reality is we have to respect the gifts that God has blessed each and every one of us with.
Okay.
You know, just the basic
okay.
point of staying in your lane. If you're a mechanic,
right.
do mechanic right. work. Don't do no brain surgery if you're a mechanic. Let the people who do what they do and respect it.
Right.
And, you know, we were talking about the solution earlier. Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I cut you off. I apologize. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was saying we were talking about solutions, but, you know, my grandmother, you know, you'll probably hear me quote my grandmother sometimes, but
okay.
my grandmother used to say that the black community is like, you know, helping in the black community is like a mosquito in a nudist camp. He knows what to do, but he just don't know what to cause. You know, so we have so much have to do, but we don't know where to start because my issue is more important than your issue. You know, you may be an economics person. I may be an educational person. I may be, the other brother may be a legal person or a spiritual person. Now,
right.
whose point is more important? Neither. They're all as equally important. So work your field. Work the vision that God has given you because where he provides the vision, he also provides the provision. He's going to give
mm-hmm.
you the people that you need at a certain point. You're not going to get them when
mm-hmm.
you still, you know, don't really know if you sold into the idea because he needs
right.
it to be solid when it's given to you. So a lot of times when we're talking about solution, we get impatient. You know, we want
mm-hmm.
the solution to happen. We don't want nobody to kill each other over the weekend. We've been killing each other on the weekend for 50, 75 years. So what makes this weekend so important? But what happens when we kill one less or two less,
mm-hmm.
and then we go
mm-hmm.
2 weekends without killing? Now we have
right.
built an appreciation for ourselves. But, you know, in truth, brothers, the bottom line is the knowledge of self. Because
okay.
if you see God in a man, how can you kill God? If you see God in yourself, how can you kill
wow.
yourself?
Now, that's something
and see,
that
a lot of times. Yes, sir.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that is something very interesting. In my ministry and in my work through my nonprofit, I've engaged quite a
mm-hmm.
few people
And one of the questions I ask is, have you ever seen God before? And there's always this blank deer in the headlight look. And the next response, what do you mean? What do you mean? I wonder, even as a pastor, if we're doing an effective job of understanding that the object of being whole as a man is being able to look at yourself and see the majesty of Elohim God, the creator of the universe. But if you can't, I like what you said, if you can't respect the nature of God within yourself, how do you hold that value for someone?
Sure. You know, for the record, I am a member of the Nation of Islam. And have been for the last 23 years. And one of the things that one of our little catchphrases, when you see a brother and you say, I want for my brother what I want for myself. Well,
right.
What if you don't want nothing for yourself? Then what do you want for your brother?
Right.
And so that's where we have to begin the process of putting a mindset. And if you begin to really talk to our young brothers and our young sisters, and more prevalently now, and our young sisters are now beginning to see hopelessness. And so
that's
now,
true.
You know, I'm going to live all I can live before I get 19, because I don't expect to see 21.
Right.
And when you have
right.
a whole culture that does not expect to see 21, of course they will live with reckless abandonment, because it's almost like New Year's Eve. It's coming. I'm about to die. So why should I prepare for a future when I don't have 2 years left anyway?
Old Lang Syne.
You know, so
Old Lang Syne.
So now what we're dealing with is not an issue of just simply putting programs together. We have to now begin to put people together, institutions of people together to solidify these people that we're coming up with. And see, our generation, the longer we procrastinate, the more we lose them.
Sure. I wrote a book. It's entitled Let Us Make a Goddamn Man, Antidotes for the Identity Crisis of the Afro Male in America. Now, goddamn makes reference to God am, meaning you exist as God. Now, my thesis is because we've lost our spiritual identity with the creator of the universe, we find ourselves in a forest and in the thicket of trouble everywhere we go. And the solution, the real answer, is identifying the essence of who you are, and that will help you identify your purpose and direction wherever you are about the globe. I would tell you that one of the main things that got young people frustrated and ready to pull a pistol and drop somebody in a minute is that, like you referred to, there is this fear that my life is worthless, and if I give them 1 second of an edge of me, their life may be more worth than have more worth than mine.
Sure.
So we got great work to do.
We have great work to do. But what we need now are cheerful workers. See, and what I mean by that, we bask in the idea of saving one. And we bask in the idea that one will save another one or 10 or 15 or 20. We start with the process of teaching how to save that one.
Right.
See, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with 1 step. And so we have to be willing to make the 1 step. But what has happened to us in a generation, a microwave generation, a nanosecond generation, is that we want success immediately. We're now trying to even rush the process of the germination of our baby.
Yes.
You know, we don't want it to come 9 months. We want to put the baby in an incubator and make the baby come in 6 and all of that. No, be patient. Because in patience, you find yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I talk to a lot of young people because I work with, I have a group in Birmingham that I work with young high school students going to the next level, and I help young men get scholarships, football, and young women as well. And I look at, as a 47-year-old, what I'm basing a decision on, you know, I'm basing my decision on, you know, how what are they going to major in and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm talking to the young man, and he tells me, well, you know, I like this school, but they don't have good uniforms.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I'm saying, uniforms, young man? Because he's thinking from a 17-year-old perspective. That's what's impressive to him, not the curriculum, not the fact, you know, how, you know, not what you can get from the educational process. He wants to look good.
Right.
Because
right.
As you know, as a child, that's what's important to him. But as a mature man, you know, we should be able to make better and more sound decisions based on what we like, you know, what is good for our people, what is good for our community, and most of all, what is good for ourselves and our relationship with God.
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. Let me, if you don't mind, let me, Pastor Wally, you want to jump in? Any questions you want to ask the magistrate or any comments you want to make so far? We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, man, I've been there actually listening and very much getting great information and love what I'm hearing. I'd like to make a comment based on what I've been hearing. And the number one thing about when a community is in captivity, when a community is captured, and I'm only going from the experience of being captured myself once upon a time. And when you're talking about how can a person get some information who need it and run off forgetting where you came from. And that was something that I did.
Get to your phone there, Pastor.
Excuse me. Or in the heart of the community, I stayed the course. And I often thought about when I got out of what I was in and what could I do to help others come out of what I just left behind.
Okay.
And I didn't want to run off and leave and forget what. So in order to restore, and you said it earlier, Pastor Doctor, as well, you said something about when you are converted. Now, that's an after. Because before you're converted, you can't do nothing for yourself, so you sure can't help nobody else. That was the situation that I was in for a lot of years.
But once
I was converted, then I was able to go help my brothers.
Okay.
And that's the situation that's going on. How many people who have received the knowledge of the truth and then left and forgot all about where they came from? And that's the hurt that I have acknowledged about what's going on now. And I appreciate what my brother is talking about because I know they're faithful in the streets. And, you know, I found a word that did say, if a man is overtaken in a fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself being tempted. So it made me not forget where I came from. And then not only that, if I can share this with you. Now, the chemical was controlling my life. Of course, you know a lot about that, Pastor Doctor, and I put it in a book form a little bit enough for information that will help a lot of people. But what happened was, after I was converted, I got free from the chemical that was destroying me and many other people. But now I'm free from it destroying me. So I'm still serving that poison. And all I can think about is, hey, I don't want to continue to do what I'm doing because I'm bringing more harm to my community just for a small piece of paper that carries a lot of weight. And I just kept fighting. And what happened was I eventually, in 1997, I got free from selling the drugs, the poison that was corrupting my own community. And that's how I felt about my community. I can't help them unless I put this drug down that's destroying me and others. And, man, I think it's important. If we don't utilize, as the brother was talking about earlier, about many areas of our lives. You may be a carpenter. You may be a ball player. You may be a teacher of some other kind. But whatever it is, if you combine it all together and you bring forth that type of power, it's going to bring some good to our community. Just like all the guys who saying they own this side of the turf, this is my turf, and they all say this is my turf, and all of a sudden you got a ball of confusion, and the harm that we bring to each other is not because
sure.
they know better. It's a learning
right.
experience. It's a learning habit. They learned that. That's how they became aware of the game. You only tried one time, whatever it is, and if you continue, that's what goes on, and that's what happened, man. I tried drugs one day, and the next thing I know, I was captive for 20 years just from trying it one time. But I thank God now that once I tried to go without and learn how to do that, I've been delivered for 24 years now. So that's the difference.
Okay.
And I'm just sitting back listening. I was embracing what I'm hearing. And the main thing is just keep doing what you're doing. Man, I thank God for the dialogue that you're all bringing forth. And I just want to continue to tune in.
All right. Well, appreciate you sharing. Your Honor, is there precedent?
Yes, sir.
Is there a precedent for if the community were to devise their own support rehabilitation? I'm not just talking about from drugs, but I mean the social rehabilitation of the mind. If they were to devise something that was documented and had an evaluation tool associated, is there a precedent for the court recognizing that as a means to avoid incarceration for an individual perhaps has not committed any major felony offense?
Could you repeat that again for me? I was having a little discussion.
Okay. I was asking if the community, let's say 15 preachers and came together and they put together a framework by which individuals who did not commit a major felony would be able to go through a therapeutic process, an in-home process, if you will,
yes, sir.
In order for their minds to be rehabilitated and retooled and so forth and so on. Is there a precedent for the court recognizing that as a means of not sending them to lockup, to physical detention?
Yes and no. And I'll say this.
Okay.
Oftentimes when I'm talking to judges, I kind of place them in two categories.
Okay.
And I know a lot of times when people offend, it has to be some action that's taken. So I ask them,
right.
I say, are you a judge that sentences to rebuild, or are you a judge that sentences to replenish? And when I ask them that, they're like, what do you mean by rebuild? When you have the penal system, everywhere in the United States, you have a department of not detention, not imprisonment, but you have a department of correction.
Right.
Now, at the basic principle of what the sentencing is to do, it is to sentence that person to a point of correction.
Okay.
Now, what programs and what has to happen, our church organizations, our civic organizations, have to really step up their game. And
okay.
what I mean by that is it's great to have Men's Day and Mother's Day and a community. What happens when an issue comes about and we need to talk to someone and you pulled on the church doors and they're locked? Like a regular, you know, we got office hours. You know, we're 9 to 5. You need to have your problems between the hours of 9 to 5. But what I'm saying in terms of judicial aspect, if they would present a plausible and achievable plan. A lot of, and like for the state of Alabama is one of the only states in the United States that houses state prisoners outside of Alabama.
What?
You know, they're contracting states, yes, sir. And right in your midst, right up under your nose, you have an organization called CCA, Corporate Corrections
right.
of America.
That
was the first ever Fortune 500 company in the first year of inception.
Mm.
Now, you tell me, you know, and I was doing every day in Alabama, the Department of Corrections, they list how many inmates they have and so on and so forth. And I was speaking for the AKAs, and at that particular time, there were 32,000 people in prison. And out of those 32,000, 16,000. And then when we did the research on the numbers, the enrollment of black males in the college institutions were right below the number of about 10,000. So when you have 5,000 more men in prison than you do in college, then you tell me what's going to happen to your society. You tell me what's going to happen to your community in a few years.
Yeah.
So I'm asking the judges, when I say, do you rebuild or do you replenish? Replenishing means, are you just sending people back so that the dangerous R word could happen? And that's recidivism. You know, is this man, this is his sixth time in prison. Now, he's six times in prison, but who's raising his son?
Absolutely.
And the streets are raising his son, and soon he'll probably be joining his father. So now you got two generations of young men that are locked up.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm asking from the standpoint of the pastors and the civic organizations, I was involved personally in a episode of help that a sister, a woman and by the name of Olivia Davis, Pastor Olivia Davis in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. She said she wanted a house that young ladies could come to when they are released from prison, because a lot of times when young ladies don't have somewhere to live, they'll go back to the life that they were living.
Correct.
They want to change, but circumstance is keeping them from changing, because they're going to resort back to what they do to maintain what they have. So what we did, we went to the community. We went into community, and by God's grace, God blessed us with a young brother who had a house in the middle of the neighborhood. It was in the middle of a crack infested neighborhood, and we asked pastors, and we had a meeting with them. And we call the concept the Unity House. This brother was so moved until he gave us his house. The one that was dilapidated, it was terrible. But what we did as a community, we went to the local hardware stores. We didn't even hit the big people, Lowe's and the Home Depot's. We went to people who had an interest in the community. And what we wanted to do is provide for these young ladies a safe place to live. So men in the community, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, came in and donated their time and built the house out. The city in kind, because of what we were doing, the city council was involved. The city council were in kind our permits. We didn't even have to pay permits. They in kind it. And then we had the businesses around the little mom-and-pop boutiques and different things like that, they donated clothes. Nothing in that house was purchased. And then what we did is we didn't wait for a grant, because we don't wait for grants to buy Jordans. We don't wait for the grants to get Mercedes. We don't wait for grants to do things that we want to do. And in the black community, sometimes we beg for what we need and buy what we want. So what we ended up doing, just as a point of clarity, we said we're not going to have a rent. We're not going to have a situation where you're paying rent, because if we did that legally, we would have to evict you if you violate. So we had everything on a donation base. And we had money. We just asked people in the community to pledge
$10 to $15 a month. And
okay,
we had enough money to provide free housing for five women, and two of the women had children, and we had bunk beds and cable televisions and everything. We had it all, internet access. We had everything, paid the gas bill and everything, and had money left over. And we allowed the young ladies, we asked them not to get on subsidy, but what we did ask them to do is go out and find a job.
Okay.
Get you some work or go to school.
Right.
And one of the young ladies who had just gotten out of prison, Pastor Doctor, this brother, this sister, put herself through community college and stayed at the house until she graduated. And 2 years ago, she graduated from the University of Alabama with a degree in nursing.
Outstanding.
So
outstanding.
It can be done. It's just a matter of how bad are we, how determined are we now to organize to do it.
Sure.
And didn't you say, Your Honor, that this all was received, that they gave, they didn't purchase anything, and put all that together?
No, sir. No, sir.
It's amazing.
We did, and we came to the, went to the different vendors and said, look, this is what we're doing. You can come by and see the house. You know, we can come by and see it. And as a point of unity, right next to it was like we had a little garden, and we call it the Unity Garden. And what we did was we ended up having like little row crops. You know, we had peppers and had, you know, tomatoes and different things like that. And what we asked is that each church in the community sponsor a row.
Man,
if it was tomatoes, if it was cucumbers or whatever it may have been, whatever you wanted to sponsor, here's a row. You come down and put your hand in the soil, and then what you ended up having, you ended up having the Baptist church and the Muslims working together. Now that was an opportunity for dialogue, Crips and Bloods and the disciples and the vice lords, and talk to them about unity. They can't throw up in our face, well, y'all ain't together. You got the first Baptist and the second Baptist and the Muslim fight. And this, so we have to reclaim the moral authority in order to go to our people.
My Lord.
They're looking for that. They're looking for that type of authority to come into their lives. But are we willing to put aside our differences, maybe, or maybe sit down and understand one another?
Okay.
And we'll find out, man, these Muslims and Christians and Jews and everybody else ain't that much different at all. But we need to stop letting other folks tell us about other people and deal with that, and deal with that knowledge.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Brother Bruce, that I'm not a traditional legal person that just talks about
in
the book, the Black Law Book, you know, because I have a deep interest and a deep love for my community, and I just happen to be in the position that I'm in. But first of all, I'm a black man in America. I don't care, because if you saw me on the streets, you wouldn't know what I did. So that's my passion. So please excuse my passion, listeners.
Hey, no need for apology, brother. You in the right place. This is Talk Straight, and that's what it's all about.
Yes, sir.
That's what you're doing. Yeah.
This is the foundation and the platform by which we can really transform our communities, so that we can transform our homes. And as we transform the home, we transform the lives of those that are within those homes. Now, it's very evident that the missing part to the puzzle, you know how it is, you put a puzzle together and you can have every other piece but the corner or the mid piece. If you don't find that missing piece, you don't have a full puzzle. And that is frankly the Afro-American males. He must be back into the puzzle of the family, therefore the neighborhood and the community. Now, I appreciate what you're saying. you and I share the same passion. Pastor Waller would tell you around Nashville, I'm not just known as a typical preacher or pastor, but I'm somebody that will raise the roof. Yes, sir. Because it's time out for he and Han and leaving work undone.
That's correct.
Right.
What you're doing now by having your honor on right now. I mean, that's the indication, you know, that your heart, you know, you have a hunger and a thirst to do all that you can do. And that's what you're doing
absolutely.
Man. And I admire that, you know.
Well, I like what
he
was saying. I like what he was saying. We got to get past Democrat-Republican so that the young brothers know that there's nothing that divide us.
That's right.
As brothers.
Right.
So don't you let any ism or schism with the Crips, the Blood, or the Disciples, or Vice Lord, or whatever you call you, whatever set you have, don't let anything divide you. You need to be one and look out for your brother.
That's right.
That's right.
And they have to learn that,
that
because the game is fast, it's speedy,
and
it's like Zoom. You know, when you live in a fast-paced life and you put all these things, all these elements out there before you, and I'm saying it only again, you know, from my experience of being captured. I was captured, and I got
captured.
I was in the fast lane. I was going at it like trusting myself, which I didn't realize at that time that I was a fool, but I discovered it later on. And I got delivered from it. But, I mean, if I trust me, I know who I'm trusting today, so I refuse to do that. And, you know, I'm open, you know, and it's amazing, man, that you get another generation of young kids who are very much innocent, and all of a sudden they join those games, and all of a sudden they become what they practice. And once they started practicing it, they become that, and they become very interested in what they're doing, and all of a sudden they don't even know who they are. And that's understandable because it's a thing that's called the gradual loss of identity. You know, it's ongoing. And when young brothers do that, because, you know, it's my example, and I feel real sad that so many people followed my example. And that's why I have a heart to do all that I can do in the community to help restore and be that example and be that proof, you know, because it's a fast lane. That's why they get all this microwave thing, as Your Honor was talking about earlier, you know, and that's the way they want it. They want it right here, right now, right away, and right today. And that's the destruction, man, that's said before. We as a whole striving to do something about it going on right now. So there's still hope.
Absolutely. Still
hope.
Your Honor, what I have been working on the last 15 years are things specifically geared at responsible fatherhood and redirecting and rehabilitating the minds of young men in particular. I'm a firm believer that if you get brothers in order, sisters will follow them.
Sure.
The problem is, you said
and
it earlier. Absolutely. You said it earlier. They're looking for love in all of the wrong places.
You're right.
Because nobody taught them where love began.
Sure.
That's it.
And one thing, and we make it fair seeming. We make it fair seeming, and I say we generally, for a man to step off on his duty. You know, I overheard a group of young brothers talking about how they were, how they was chilling and they weren't going to get a woman no money for them babies and da 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 da. And I said, well, brother, what you might as well do right now is just put a gun in your mouth and shoot yourself in the head.
Right.
Because what you are doing, you are right now being more of a nuisance than anything we can find, because what you're denying yourself the right to expand your life through your son or your daughter.
That's it.
But you're failing to grow right things. I believe that we have to really get into in a passionate manner is fatherhood training or manhood training in general.
Absolutely.
You know, when you have young boys who grow up who don't know how to cut grass, who don't know how to change a tire,
who don't know how to tie a tie. I was dealing with a young man. I was dealing with him, and he was a beautiful young man, but he was 13 years old, and he didn't know that young men stood up to use the bathroom.
Watch out.
Because he had never seen a young man use the bathroom. His mother potty trained him.
Yeah,
that's right.
So
that's
she taught him the way she knew.
That's right.
Mm. Well,
and as I said earlier, there is a father present. I mean, there, but we have to now make him socially present.
Correct. Well, that's true. It is amazing the things that often people take for granted that are unknown to good people, and they don't realize that the cause of their demise is the ignorance or the lack of understanding. And that's where I was going earlier when I talked about the breakdown in terms of a general unawareness of things that are expected of you, right? And the lack of understanding about the difference between what you set aside or you accept as being normal. Well, that's just how we do. That's how we get down, and people need to respect that about us. The truth is, as you pointed out, Your Honor, you don't know that you're causing your own subsequent demise. Because what happens often is old cat come back on the block, and it's that young dude that drops you and run you off the block. And he may not even know that you're the one that donated the sperm to get him in.
Exactly the point. You know, and intellectually, Brother Reuben, I like that analogy. We had an issue in the Birmingham area where we had, and I kind of relate that to that. We had an issue politically where we had a young brother who was 33 years old.
Okay.
And he was running for a position. But the incumbent was 72 years old. Now, I said to myself, the world is looking at us like, look at those
people. Right.
Because they would have their generations competing with one another rather than training and forwarding one another.
Amazing. Amazing. Amazing.
And that's why I say, you know, what we have to do is bring real ourselves back into, as we talked about, being able to make the rules by being able to create realities of truth for self, for ourselves.
Right.
Now, what is known for ourselves? Is it normal? Is it normal for men to do certain things? Yes, it's normal for certain men to take care of their families. That's a normal thing. I'm kind of like Chris Rock, who said, I get tired of black folk trying to get credit for what they should do. You know, I take care of my children. Well, you brought them here.
Right.
Who else going to take care of them?
You all do.
You know, and with that attitude, like, I'm a good dad because I provide for my children. Now, I think that's a necessity point. I mean, that's
absolutely
just like buying a car, Mercedes, and be happy because it crunk. You bought the car because it was supposed to crank.
You expect
not
to,
you know, you should be surprised that the car is cranking up. You should be more surprised if it didn't crank up. So we get excited about the exception rather than making it a rule.
Right. Gentlemen, this is getting really, really good. We have about 10 minutes before the show ends. I want to introduce this thought, if I might. You know that we're aiming to come your way, Your Honor. And I just want to share with you the basic model that we want to bring to each city. This is Building Families and Communities Institute. If I might just share with you this basic construct. And it's a crime intervention advocacy. I like what you said, Your Honor. It begins with us policing ourselves, policing our behavior, policing our mentality, and policing the outcome from our families and our neighborhoods.
And having said that, the idea is that, and you mentioned this, you had local volunteers who were organized. A part
right.
of the model as well is getting particularly young people involved in the process of organizing themselves for one common thought and purpose, and then collaborating with partners in the business industry and things of that nature, as well as other business affiliates. And we believe that when you
sure.
pull those four things together and you establish what we're calling a coalition, basically, a crime intervention coalition,
mm-hmm.
you have everybody involved
mm-hmm.
all the way down to the gangbanger, to the most educated college professor, or to a magistrate, or to a social worker. Everybody's involved. The preacher is involved in the whole process of the coalition. But what we have to say to ourselves is that the greatest crime against ourselves is to deny ourselves of the opportunity for self-sufficiency, independence, and being able to move from one generation to the next with that same principle. That's the greatest crime.
That is so true. It is. It's a travesty.
It is. It is. So let me, it's about 7 minutes here. Let me, Your Honor, wrap us up here, and then we hear from Pastor Waller, and then we'll. I hate to cut us off, man. Time is working against us. So, Your Honor,
yes,
if you will give us some final thoughts there, and we'll pick this up again a little bit there. We thank you for coming out. You listen to Talk Straight. This is your host,
yes,
Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we have our special guest, Bessemer's Chief Magistrate, Maurice Muhammad. His brother come and gave us some powerful information that we need to use here. You want to wrap us
yeah.
up there, Your Honor?
I guess in closing, I would like to close with the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that he gave us in a document called Self-Improvement.
Okay.
And in our
okay.
study guide of self-improvement, the theme is self-improvement is the basis for community development.
Mm-hmm.
So it is easy to improve your block when your house is in order.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to improve your house when the members are in order. And
okay.
it's easy to improve the members when you are in order. So if
right.
you begin to self-improve, self-improvement is the basis for where we need to be going. So I think
all
everything
right.
that we do, we should apply it to self first and then love the community enough to share with them this improved individual. I applaud
okay.
Brother Waller, who saw himself part of the problem but was blessed
mm-hmm.
enough to be a part of the solution.
Yes,
I applaud Brother Dockery for what you are doing, and thank you for inviting me onto your show. I'm very passionate, and I hope I didn't talk too much. But I'm very passionate about our community getting it together. So I'm honored,
right.
and to all of your listeners, thank you for this opportunity. I'm always available for you. I'm always available to you. My daughter is at Fisk University right now as a,
oh, wow.
a junior at Fisk. So, yes,
okay.
sir. So, and shouts out to my baby, Nayira Muhammad. I love her. And, you know, I'm just so, I don't know your involvement or your connection with Mosque Number 60 there in Nashville, Minister Harrell, but all of those brothers, we need to touch base, man, because all of us are doing the same thing. All of us are
okay.
trying to make sure that we have a positive input into our community. So, brothers and sisters,
okay.
regardless to what your station in life is, find a way to contribute to the success of your community. Thank you, beloved.
All right. All right. All right. All right. But Pastor Waller, right quickly, give us a word there briefly.
Yeah, I would like to tell Your Honor that he could have kept the little time that I had left so you could continue, man. I enjoyed it too much. You know, I just enjoyed it like that, man. I really did. And Pastor Doctor, thanks again. the thing I would like to say in wrapping up as well is to stay disciplined oneself. And that means my practices have to become different than what it used to be. Once that I practiced something that's different, it made a difference. But as long as I was practicing the same thing over and over and over again, I needed to find out how to change that. And then it happened. So I just continued to practice righteousness, and it makes a grand of a difference. Be that witness as you have been and continue to be. And I'm in contact with those brothers here in the mosque. Just thought I'd let you know that. Yeah, I am. I'm in contact with them.
Okay. Beautiful.
Yeah, man.
Great. All right. God bless. Well, you're listening again to Talk Straight, and I hate to bring it to an end. This is a good thing. It's a good thing. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're grateful for all of you tuning in. We've noticed that a lot of our listeners tune in after the fact, or they're listening and they're not necessarily calling, but we're grateful. We're looking forward to coming to the Birmingham Bessemer area with our seminar and workshop to engage brothers and sisters in proactive measures. So I want to encourage you to go to our website to learn more about it, bfcinstitute.com, and look at the piece that we have, the traveling lecture series. Your Honor, I've went back 150 years to 1865 to identify key historical events affecting the evolution of Afro males in America since slavery ended. And we tried to understand what is it that brought us to where we are. What lessons can we learn to improve ourselves and so forth and so on. So, again, we look forward to sharing that to all of our national audience. And I hate that our time is coming upon us, but we're grateful again for you coming, Your Honor, and we definitely will be in touch with you. Pastor Waller, thank you again.
And thank you once again, and may God bless all of you.
Yeah, thanks again, y'all.
Okay.
All right.
And we're gonna close the show out with this thought here as we prepare to go. You brothers, go in peace. And I believe the words is Walaikum
Assalam. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
All right, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Again, we thank you and listening audience. Thank you for joining us. And we'll be back again on Tuesday. December the 6th, we'll have Ms. Lori McNeil, who is a mental health specialist, and we'll be talking about, again, how to empower parents. Thank you for listening to Talk Straight. Look forward to seeing you on next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m.